Welcome into another edition of NBA Sound System. Gil McGregor here, back again with Scott Rafferty. Scott, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. I will say the NBA feels like it always surprises me. We had a pretty rapid first day of free agency, I thought. Like, yeah. You know, a lot of signings announced early, and then it felt like we were going to have a quiet weekend, and then, hey, Saturday morning, Damian Lillard requests a trade. So it never stops, but it's exciting. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm waiting on my Supermax, and if I don't get a Supermax, maybe I'll settle for a veteran's minimum to join the Suns. They need some guys to fill out that roster. So listen, I can give you guys James Jones, maybe like 5 or 6 minutes of communication. I might not be on my defensive rotations, but I'll communicate well, and I'll be a good locker room guy. So
yep, locker room presence.
Exactly. You know, you need guys to fill out that roster. Rosters can carry like 18 players now. So yep. What do you know? You mentioned Damian Lillard, and that kind of was what sent shockwaves through the league this weekend. We almost couldn't even focus on the big free agency signings that happened, which we will get to here, but we have to talk about the elephant in the room, and that is Damian Lillard finally ripping the Band-Aid off, so to speak, and requesting a trade from the Trailblazers. It almost kind of got to the point where I wasn't expecting it to happen, and then it kind of comes out of nowhere. It makes sense. The writing was on the wall. Feels like both parties need to go separate directions. But what do you think about the timing of it, and also just the news of Damian Lillard finally requesting a trade out of Portland?
Well, I got to say, I'm not surprised that it came to this, right? Because I feel like mm-hmm. the writing has been on the wall for a little bit. I know we've dealt with, like, is Damian Lillard going to request a trade for what feels like 5+ years at this point? But this offseason did feel a little bit different just based on some of the comments that he made, you know, after the season. I mean, he was pretty open about that. There was none of this like, oh, it seems like Damian Lillard, you know, wants them to make moves. Like he came out and said it, like he wanted them to be aggressive. He wanted them to all that stuff about the number 3 pick, trading that to try and get guys who can help them win now. So I'm not surprised that it's come to this, because it did feel like this offseason was different. But I got to say, the timing of it, I was surprised by. I mean, That news that Jeremy Grant was signing that big contract on the first day of free agency, you know, and then the next day Damian Lillard requests a trade, that one did catch me off guard. I will say that.
Yeah, that deal for Jeremy Grant, 5 years, $160 million, which you talked about a lot. It's a lot. And Jeremy Grant is a fine player. It's interesting to kind of see the command that he had on the market in free agency. It feels like that deal wouldn't have been done had Dame not come out and said, my dream list of guys I want to play with is Jeremy Grant and Draymond Green and all this and all that. And Draymond re-signed with the Warriors pretty quickly after free agency started. So maybe that was, you know, the final straw that broke the camel's back as far as Dame doing what we all expect him to do. I don't want to call it unfair, because Dame has done so much for the organization. I do think that it reminds us, a reinforcement, why they made the right move in taking Scoot Henderson. They already have the heir apparent for Damian Lillard. They have that young franchise or a young crop of talent with Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe and Anfernee Simons. That being said, the question now is where do they send Dame Lillard? All of the reports is that Dame wants to go to Miami and nowhere else. But on one hand, you know, they owe him maybe trying to meet his, you know, request. But at the end of the day, the Trailblazers have to do what's best for the Trailblazers. I know you kind of rounded up some of the rumors over at the Sporting News, and whether or not the Heat are the front runner in Dame's mind doesn't matter, because who can put together the best package? So when you think about like the blend of who can put together a good package, but also who can continue to contend and be a good team with Lillard, what stands out to you?
I mean, if we're being honest, the Heat cannot put together the best package, right? Like it's probably Tyler Herro, who's a fine player, good offensive player, but certainly not, I don't think, like a future all-star. I don't necessarily see him at that level. And they're just limited in the amount of picks they can trade, right? Mm-hmm. And sure, we're talking about a, what is it, 10-year veteran, 11-year veteran who's entering his mid-30s, is a small point guard. Like, these guys tend not to age particularly well. But I mean, Lillard statistically is coming off the best season of his career. I think he's a guy, knowing how well he can shoot and all that, I would expect a couple, at least like 2 or 3, probably more all-star, all-NBA seasons left in him, right? So,
right.
And he's under contract. Yes, that contract could look pretty bad by the end of it. It does. But that's one of those things, like, it's different from the James Harden situation, where it's like you're trading him for potentially, especially when you factor in Harden's track record recently, mm-hmm. of like a rental, right? No matter what, this team is getting Lillard for, what is it, like 4 more years at the very least. So there is some more security in that. So the reality is that he can't offer the best package. time will tell if that actually matters, because it does seem like Damian Lillard wants to go there. And I think I would imagine the Trailblazers want to do as right by him as they can. Like, that's what's difficult about the situation, mm-hmm. because you're better at the history stuff than I am, but he's up there as one of the greatest, arguably the greatest Portland Trailblazer of all time, right? And the amount that he's meant to that franchise, that city, like, you do want to treat him well. You do want to send him somewhere he wants to go to. But the other hand is, like, even though the Trailblazers do have a couple of really young, good young guys, like, I really like Scoot Henderson. Shaden Sharpe showed a lot of promise last year. Mm-hmm. Like, this is your opportunity to get a massive package for Lillard, right?
Right.
So, you know, on July 2nd, Woj reported that, you know, they're open for business. They're trying to do look for the best deal they can. He said a combination of young players, draft picks, salary cap relief. Who knows how much of that is, you know, the Blazers basically saying, this is what we want. All right, Miami, step up your offer as much as you can. Or if they're actually interested in, like, hearing from other teams.
Yeah, that's the thing that's so interesting, especially kind of, I guess, comparing this to the Bradley Beal situation, where Bradley Beal actually had a no trade clause to where he could really control where he wanted to go. And I know you mentioned the history that's there between Lillard and the front office in Portland, and he is arguably the greatest player to play, you know, and for that franchise. You know, obviously you can mention Bill Walton, who won a championship there, Clyde Drexler, who did a lot of things there, but Dame Lillard, all-time leading scorer, lots of ups and downs, and obviously, as we talked about, the loyalty and sticking with them through some ups and downs over the past couple of years. I think that's what's interesting, because he could have done this a year ago, you know, or in the last few years, when I think everybody on the outside, it's easier to say it from the outside looking in. Like, this has been obvious for a while, especially when they kind of fell off and had that lottery pick last year. It kind of felt like both sides needed to part ways, and they were kind of hanging on to something that wasn't there. And they had a great start to last season. Yep. I think we talked about that, you know, last week. And then they kind of fell off pretty hard. And Dame, you know, to be honest, they like shelved Dame early to maximize their opportunity in the draft lottery, and they moved up and they got the third pick. So all those things kind of aligned, and it felt like, you know, at that point when they realized they couldn't get anything that they wanted for that third pick, it was time to move on. So the timing of it coming after they make a big free agency decision, I don't know what kind of deal they could get for Jerami Grant before eventually they'll probably trade him. But when I think about, you know, as far as the package they could get in return and trying to find that balance between doing right by Dame but doing right by the organization, get curious to see if they can get a third team involved. I know they're saying, you know, that they're really trying to find a taker, you know, for Tyler Hero to make sure, you know, because again, to see if that heat thing can happen. I know that I've read reports that I think Chris Haynes said that the Pelicans have inquired, the Celtics have inquired as well. And I know Ramona Shelburne said that Damian Lillard has a high reverence, you know, a deep reverence for the Spurs organization. So it's Damian Lillard. He's coming off a season that we talked about. There are going to be teams, any team, any front office that's worth anything is going to at least inquire about it. But I'm just curious to see, you know, how much substance is there to those rumors, or is it just a bunch of noise, like you said, to get Miami to step it up and really just exhaust all options? And Brooklyn's another team that we didn't mention. I know that Portland has a desire to not keep Dame in the Western Conference. So Brooklyn does have picks that they've acquired, and they do have a young core. I don't think they'd be ready to win as quickly as Miami would. And then that's where Dame being 33 kind of comes into play. So many moving parts, so many things going on as far as this goes, but at least the first step is there with Dame requesting the trade.
Yep. And that's the interesting thing about this, is that a team like the Nets, I don't think has, we're assuming Bridges is off the table in this situation. Right. I think that's a safe assumption. I don't think there's like an obvious like young prospect that the Trailblazers would necessarily want for them. That would be very heavily focused on picks, I would think. You know, a team like the 76ers, I mean, Dame and Joel would be awesome together. Who knows if Harden would be in that deal for whatever reason, but by all accounts, it seems like they're not willing to trade Tyrese Maxey, right? And he's probably one of the better young players, I would think, they might be able to get in a Damian Lillard trade, at least when you look at these teams. I also think, by the way, like, look, I feel like we've reached a point where we should never count out the Raptors, Masai Ujiri specifically. That's true. He's taken big swings before. We know he's not afraid to do it. Scotty Barnes, I don't like that. All the reporting was they wouldn't include him in a trade for Kevin Durant. Would they do it for Damian Lillard? I don't know. Maybe after the sophomore year that he had, maybe the answer is yes. Maybe the answer is still no. You know, that's another team that they can put together a few draft picks. They could probably go in a couple different directions too. Maybe it's like an OG Anunoby plus salary and then all the draft picks for Dame, and then you keep Scotty Barnes, Pascal. Maybe this is a Siakam trade. I don't know, but that's another team that kind of, when you look through these teams, like you know, the list of front offices that can kind of offer a really good young player and draft picks, also be able to match salary. Like, it's not easy. These trades aren't necessarily easy to come up with. There was one, like a three-team trade with the Sixers and the Clippers, I think is interesting in theory. But having gone through that exercise of like putting that deal together, it's just another one of those things where like I don't think there's enough in it for the Trailblazers to actually sign off on that.
I think the Trailblazers are in such an interesting spot when you think about another guy in Brooklyn. We talked about Ben Simmons as a guy who's still a young player who could get mentioned in these talks and is making a lot of money with Brooklyn. But when you talk about these things and when we continue to mention Dame's age, and I'm looking at his contract figures, 2026, he has a player option for $63 million. He'll be 36 years old. And then when I think about the Trailblazers, who could potentially be putting Yusuf Nurkic in this deal as well to get off of his money, they are so loaded at the guard position. We talked about Sharp, Simons, and Scoot Henderson now. So it's harder for a team to sell them on a guy like Tyler Hero, because although he's been kind of a borderline all-star, already sixth man of the year in the league, what does he take away from those guys? So I don't even think that it's necessarily, you know, a criticism of Hero's game that they're not that interested. It's more them saying, hey, we're set at that position. We need to build our roster out in other ways. And when I think about it and I look at that and I focus back to Dame and that contract figure, I ask you, how much do you – I know you kind of mentioned the concerns a little bit, but if you are a team, how much of a window do you realistically think that getting Dame adds to you? Like, are you contending for a championship for the next 3 years? And I guess I asked that to say, like, how many of the chips is it worth pushing in to have this opportunity to get Dame if you are, you know, different? Like, for the Heat, I understand they were a couple wins away from winning the championship this past year. Adding him could make them the favorite, but those other teams like Brooklyn, like I said, it would take a couple years. Can they wait, and will Dame still be playing at that level when that team is ready?
Brooklyn, I'm skeptical of. I think they'd be really good. I just don't know if they're at that level where it makes sense to cash in all those chips. I think Philly's a really interesting one, again, because of Tyrese Maxey. Like, he kind of opens up their window a little bit if he kind of continues to develop the way that he has so far in his career. Like, really good young player. But obviously, if you're trading him for Damian Lillard, who's older, like, they're just an interesting situation too, because Joel Embiid's incredible, gets better every year, won MVP this season. He also has a long injury history. Like, how long is realistically is his prime going to be? So is that one of those things where it's just like, we can do everything we can now to maximize it, or do they actually think they have another, I don't know, 6 years of this with Joel? So they're the interesting one to me. Yeah, I mean, the Celtics are another one where it's like, I don't know if they do the Jaylen Brown, Damian Lillard one. I also don't know if the Trailblazers necessarily would want Jaylen Brown, because he might be like a little bit older than what they're ideally targeting. I'm trying to think of some other teams here that come to mind. But it's definitely tricky. But I think the Heat, obviously, like you said, they just make the most sense, right? Like, this team's done, what, two trips to the finals in the last 4 or 5 years. Bam Adebayo is still pretty young, but Jimmy Butler's up there. You want to make the most out of his window while he's still got it. I also just think he'd be such a smooth fit there, right? Without knowing what else would be involved. I just think, like, the offense-defense balance, how he'd complement both of them. I'm not surprised, one, that all reporting indicates that they want him, and two, that he wants to go there as well.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say one more team that was mentioned from Chris Haynes was Timberwolves have inquired. And again, you're going to inquire. It's Damian Lillard, an NBA 75 player that's playing there. That's interesting to think about. I think the biggest thing to kind of sum it all up is what Portland ultimately wants. Is it a young front court player? I know they want young talent, but it's like the most attractive thing, a young front court player. And does that put the Raptors in an advantage if they are willing to potentially maybe part ways with Scottie Barnes? Is that premature after they didn't do it for Kevin Durant last offseason? It's a lot to think about, but I think ultimately, you know, as this drags on a little bit, we'll learn more about what Portland says. Before we go to a break, I'll ask you, how long do you think this is going to drag out? Again, that trade request came on July 1st. We are recording this on July 3rd. It kind of feels like this is going to take some time to kind of play out, and we'll probably be still talking about this for weeks to come. I say that now that it's going to happen as soon as we finish recording, but I do kind of get the feeling it's going to take a little time.
Yeah, we're going to have to hop back on and do an emergency pod. I think it's going to take some time. I think ultimately the Trailblazers know there's a package out there from the Heat, right? Like there's probably a guarantee there almost, because that offer's not going anywhere. So it makes sense for them to do their due diligence and see what else is out there, see if there's a better package they can get. I also think the Harden one's going to take forever as well, just knowing how Daryl Morey has handled this stuff in the past, especially with Ben Simmons, you know, and that actually worked out. Like, Ben Simmons not playing for a year kind of probably got them a better return than they would have had they traded when that stuff first happened. So I think after that, whatever it was, when the fiscal year turned over, the new CBA went into effect, and teams didn't, you know, it was a little bit harder for teams to make trades. I think it would have made sense for one of them to do a trade before then. Now that they haven't, I do think it's probably going to take some time.
That makes sense. So that'll just be the underlying theme throughout free agency. And there's a lot to talk about with free agency. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll talk some of the moves that have already happened during the early days of the first weekend of free agency, some winners and some losers and some fits that we really like around the league. So quick break. We'll talk free agency. All right, so NBA free agency got underway at 6 p.m. Eastern time on June 30th, and about like 6:01, all the deals were coming in to our phones. If you had your tweet notifications working, that is if Twitter was working for you. Anyway, I'm saying, because Twitter goes down the worst possible time as we're trying to consume as much NBA knowledge as we possibly can. But still, we found out a lot of some notable deals that happened right away, pretty much. Kyle Kuzma staying in Washington, Draymond Green staying in Golden State. I think that we kind of could read the tea leaves once they parted ways with Jordan Poole. Guys have kind of moved on. We got Fred VanVleet going to Houston, which I'm sure we'll get into in a second. But when you look at kind of what's happened in the first weekend of free agency, who really stands out as really kind of knocking out of the park as your biggest winner from the first weekend of free agency?
There are a couple teams that come to mind. For this exercise, I'll lean towards the Lakers. I think, given what they had, you know, what was available to them, I don't know if they could have done much better than they have. I mean, I like the idea of taking a flyer on Jackson Hayes, super young big man who was drafted highly, hasn't lived up to those expectations. But I think, you know, simplifying his role next to LeBron and AD, maybe you get the best version out of him. You know, bringing back Rui Hachimura. I'm interested to see how that deal works out, because I think, you know, there's no way Rui would have made that money had he not done what he did in the playoffs. So I'm interested to see if he can kind of continue that play, or if that was kind of like a flash in the pan, he returns to the play he was before then. But I think that's, you know, a solid deal for them. And then adding Taurean Prince, I think, has had moments as like a 3-and-D wing, adds to their size. Cam Reddish, I think the idea of Cam Reddish is obviously far better than what he's been so far in his career, but he's another big wing. Might as well take a flyer on him. The big one for me is Gabe Vincent. I really like that signing for them. Toughness, gritty defender. Yeah, he's a little undersized. The big question for him is, he shot really well from three in the playoffs. Wasn't that great of a three-point shooter during the regular season. And we know how much spacing, how important that is to LeBron and AD. So I'm interested to see if he can continue that. But I do like that addition to the team. And the big one for me is honestly getting Austin Reeves for the price that they did. Absolutely. I mean, going into, felt 2 months ago that there was, you know, the possibility of him getting a $100 million contract and them having to, you know, match that and what that would do to their salary sheet. So for them to get him at $56 million, I think that's a huge, huge win.
Yeah, I'm very interested that you mentioned the Lakers first, because I actually saw, I think it was Tim Bontemps on Get Up this morning, talked about really thinking that they didn't get that much better. I saw that he got, you know, they got a B-plus grade over on ESPN, and we were really high over at the Sporting News on what they did. And really, they did their team at the trade deadline last year. And I remember having some conversations about them, saying that, hey, this is like a roster that probably would win somewhere between 47 and 50 games had they been together from day one. And you talked about the guys that they've added. And I actually am pretty high on what they were able to do, given the constraints that they had in doing it. So I guess two-parter before I get into my winner. One, do you think LeBron, who was a little critical of the roster once they were swept, do you think he'll be pleased with what they've done? And two, do you think that they got good enough to kind of surge towards that top four in the Western Conference this upcoming season?
Yeah, I think the reason I consider them a winner is I don't know what else they could have really done, to be honest. Yeah. Like, I think this is about as well as they could have done. Mm-hmm. So whether or not that means LeBron's happy about it, like, realistically, again, I don't know how much happier you could be considering the moves that they made.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you, I thought this was, you know, a legitimately like good team after the moves they made in the trade deadline. So to kind of bring everyone back and also add to their depth, like they've got, they're a pretty deep team now, right? Like they've got a good like 8 to 10 man rotation probably, at least in the regular season. And then you see how guys develop, who makes it for the final curve to make the playoffs. They're also just like, the thing that jumped out about them last season were like that they're just a big team, right?
Yeah.
Anthony Davis isn't necessarily like a traditional center.
Right. I mean,
he's still, you can't score against him in the paint. And then to have Jared Vanderbilt, LeBron James, and then you're adding guys like Taurean Prince to that, like they're just massive on the wing. So there's so much unknown in the West, right? There's so many different things that can happen. But it does feel kind of like, based on the way they ended last season, the moves that they made this season, that I mean, they should be, if they're not a top six team at the very least, and avoiding that play-in, I think that'd be a huge disappointment. Health provided, of course, which is a big question for them.
Health is huge for them. And one more note on them. Well, speaking of that, LeBron's going to be healthy next year. They also added Jalen Hood-Schifino in the draft, who Kyle Irving has been high on throughout the draft process. And they haven't ruled out bringing back Mo Bamba, who they released, but they can bring him back on a more team-friendly deal, and they can kind of fill out that center rotation. He got injured last year and wasn't able to really play for them during their postseason stretch. That being said, I'll stay in the Pacific Division. I kind of was back and forth on how I felt about it at first, but again, this is a team that's doing best they can given the constraints that they're working with, and that's the Phoenix Suns.
Yep.
I know we talked about it last week when we talked about the Bradley Beal deal and just all the money that they have tied into four guys. It was a little surprising that they ended up letting Jock Landale walk, but they brought in guys. Yuta Watanabe reunites with Kevin Durant. That's a huge signing for them as far as the ability to knock down three-pointers the way he did it last year. Another guy who shot the ball really uncharacteristically well. It's not to say that he's going to shoot poorly next year. I don't necessarily think he'll be, you know, leading the league in three point percentage for as long as he did last year, but that's a big time signing, add size to that roster. Katabase Diop is a guy who kind of could be an underrated signing for them. Then they bring in Eric Gordon, who even going into, I think, year 15 or 16 for him, I think is a guy who will fit in. We talk about developmental timelines, championship window timelines, a guy who's ready to win. It's kind of funny. I mentioned back when he was with the New Orleans Hornets after that Chris Paul trade in 2012, he tried to sign with Phoenix, and now 11 years later, he is officially with the Phoenix Suns. So, you know, on one hand, I think that all of those guys they're asking a lot of those guys because they really do need to fill into those roles. I'm not expecting major injuries, but I'm expecting those guys of that core four that they have to miss time throughout the season. So how much can you count on some of those guys to step up throughout the regular season? But I just think as far as getting a team that's trying to support those guys and win a title right away, I think they've got the right idea there. So I do think that the Suns have done a great job this offseason.
Yeah, they were the other team I was considering for this answer, to be honest. Again, not that I just think they've kind of done the best with what they had, right? Mm-hmm. My concern would be, I already have questions about, I think Beal, Booker, and Durant are going to figure it out. I think they're going to be okay, right? Like, they're super versatile offensive players, interchangeable. They can wear many different hats. But I do wonder, Eric Gordon specifically, like, I wonder if there's a little too much of the same thing there. Like, I already had that concern, but now I think that's almost like doubling down on that. In saying that, you know, to your point, one guy gets injured, he's probably best suited to kind of fill that role as a shooter, additional playmaker, and everything like that. So yeah, I think that bringing Damian Lee back to one of the best most accurate 3-point shooters of the last few seasons, Yuta, I think was a great pickup by them. So it'll be interesting to see now if they're kind of done or if like they go back to the 8 and stuff and look for, you know, to trade him and flip him for something else. But that 4 in particular and adding some depth around them, I'm interested to see what they do about point guard too, because I know like Cameron Payne, you probably fill him in, I guess, to be their starting point guard on night one, but you could also just bump like Booker, right? Because he's shown some promise being able to kind of fill that role, especially that last year when Chris Paul went down. So I am curious to see if they look for someone else there or if they kind of just, you know, they think Cameron Payne plus Beal, Booker, even KD, like that's enough to kind of make up for it.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. You know, we talked about just kind of where they fell out their roster. And I know that you actually focused on this before the Suns were the Suns, but Devin Booker's, you know, continuous growth throughout his career as a playmaker and kind of handling those point guard duties. do you trust him full time for a real championship contender or just in spots?
It's tough, man, because he's legitimately grown as a passer. Like, I think he is a good passer now, right? Especially you throw attention at him, he's going to find the open man more times than not. But really, like, until you see it, I feel like it's hard to know if they kind of need a more traditional point guard, even if it's just to, like, slow stuff down, get them into their sets, because that's not necessarily who Booker is. So that's why I want to – the same thing, like, we just saw with Eric Gordon, though, right? Like, they're going to be a destination for some of these vets.
Right.
So who knows whether it's, you know, now, 6 months' time, someone gets waived, you know, like, there's always going to be guys available. You know, I think Darren Collison worked out for them. Is that right?
I did see that.
That's another guy.
I hope you're listening.
Yeah, exactly. you know, guys like that, like, who knows if they can be in a playoff rotation, but these players, right, I do feel like come available.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I have to double check on this. And that's something we'll revisit it next week. But I do know that there's new stuff in the CBA about teams who are overpaying and their inability to be on the buyout market. So that makes free agency much more important for this Suns team. Now, we talked about our winners out. We'll take the negative tone now. The losers, at least so far in free agency. And if you're a fan of a loser, no worries. There's plenty of time for them to turn it around. But as of right now, who's kind of come on the short end right now?
I think the Raptors losing Fred VanVleet just makes them an easy loser for me, unfortunately. Yeah. Look, they just lost a lot of good players for nothing over the last few years, right?
That's
we saw Marc Gasol, Kawhi Leonard makes a ton of sense. Like, you know, they took a gamble, I guess. It wasn't even that big of a gamble when you look back at what they got. But, right, you know, they signed up for a potential one-year rental. You live with that. But Marc Gasol, I think Kyle Lowry, yes, they did get a return on him, but they probably, you know, got to that point way too late.
Before then.
Yeah. And then now Fred VanVleet. Like, these are all really, really good players who you think pretty much every team in the league would want when they could have traded them. So to lose him for absolutely nothing, I think really hurts for them, you know. And Dennis Schroeder, I think as a replacement, was fine. Like, they acted quickly on him. He's solid. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things, like, we've spent the last 12 plus months wondering where the Raptors are going, right? Which direction they're going to go in.
Right.
And I just think there's even more questions now, right? Because you lose Fred VanVleet for nothing, but then you sign Schroeder. That signals to me that, like, you still kind of want to be competitive and see what you can get. But maybe if Fred VanVleet does leave, now's the time to really kind of hit that rebuild button, see what you can get for guys, and really turn this team over to Scotty Barnes. So I just think they're in an even more confusing place now than they were kind of going into free agency.
And that tough part about, you know, signing Schroeder and really, like, trying to continue to compete, because the other part of that is retaining Jakob Poeltl, right? 4 years, $80 million. Because if he walks for nothing, like you said, not only does he walk for nothing, you also lose next year's first round pick, which they traded to get him. So now it's like they're not playing for a first round pick next season. So they do have to compete, because whether or not they finish seventh and you know, win the play in or finish 13th or 14th, they don't have a first round pick, at least unless they make a trade. And that's something that could be, you know, on the back end of them being a loser during this free agency period. And I guess, like, the question when you look at having a new regime as far as the coaching staff goes, but still having Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster in place, how hard do you hit the reset button? You know, is it just, you know, finally, maybe potentially moving OG? Is it starting to entertain these trade talks or trade calls that are coming in from about Pascal Siakam? Because we've seen teams do it. You know, we just talked about the Nets, right? Like, the Nets were still a playoff team after kind of hit the reset button really hard and got rid of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving last year. So I don't know, you know, having, you know, Dennis Schroeder and Grady Dick and Scotty Barnes, potentially Precious Achiuwa, those guys they have, and Jakob Poeltl, who is with the franchise for years to come now, at least for now. Is that enough that if you are able to move one of those other two guys, you can still be one of those, like, kind of annoying teams that maybe you picked up some draft capital and you can really rebuild? Is Dennis Schroeder maybe a bridge guy like that? Or are they just going to try to run it back? I don't really know where I stand on that, but I don't know how you feel if one of those things stands out above the other.
Well, we just saw this, like, two timelines thing with the Warriors, right? And how difficult that is to kind of thread that needle. And the tricky thing is for the Raptors is, well, I mean, Scotty Barnes is better, I think it's fair to say, than Jonathan Kuminga and James Wiseman, right? But then also their top-end talent isn't as good as Steph Curry and Draymond Green and probably Clay, if you want to loop him in there. So I just, ultimately, I think this comes down to how high the Raptors still are on Scotty Barnes, right? Yeah. I already said it, like, they didn't want to trade him for Kevin Durant. But if they still envision him being the best player on either a really good team or even a championship team, I think you probably do reset, right? And you try and build the perfect team around him, knowing how good he can be. But if after his sophomore season, they're not quite at that level, then, you know, do you trade him for Damian Lillard and say like, okay, Damian Lillard will be the best player on this team. We have him for 4 years. We're going to extend Pascal Siakam, pair him with OG Anunoby. We already got Jakob Poeltl. That's the weird thing about them where it's like, moving Scottie Barnes, they could get a really, really good player for him and I think be one of the best teams in the East. But, you know, do you want to trade him is ultimately the big question. And we also had this, by the way, last year, same time last year. So,
I think the most intriguing thing about Scottie Barnes is we really don't know what he can become. And I'm curious about the vision, especially having a new head coach in Rajakovic, what they envision him becoming. And like you mentioned, what that perfect team around him looks like. So I think we'll learn a lot about that based on kind of the small moves they make. And speaking of small moves, they also added Jalen McDaniels, who you profiled last season as a trade deadline target. And he eventually ends up with the Raptors. Also a good friend of Malachi Flynn. So who knows what that means moving forward, but they added him as well. So we'll see what the Raptors do. I'm sure there are more moves in store and we'll continue to monitor the situation around OG Anunoby, who hasn't really been mentioned in trade talks yet, but there's some rumblings about Pascal Siakam. So we'll see if there's anything substantive to that as we keep going out. As for my loser, I guess these two teams are related now because head coach leaves one place and goes to another place. I think the Sixers are kind of just in a weird no man's land right now. They're kind of pulling out all stops to re-sign or retain James Harden. Then he opts in order to seek a trade. I don't necessarily think that's the Sixers' fault. I think that kind of says more about James Harden. I think he's got, 3 trade requests in the last 2.5 years?
Something like that, yeah.
That's pretty insane.
Yep.
But, you know, the asking price that they apparently have for James Harden and what they're seeking in return, the asking price they've apparently had for Tobias Harris and what they're trying to seek and maybe trying to move him and get him off the books. And then the whole Tyrese Maxey thing that you and I discussed earlier, you know, for a team who was really in the driver's seat to advance to the conference finals and break that 22-year drought and then just losing games 6 and 7, just really in demoralizing fashion, to now being in a spot where I don't know if they can do anything to kind of improve, like the teams, at least, you know, the Bucks got a new head coach. They're going to be healthy next year. You know, the Celtics added Chris Porzingis. I know the Sixers have a new head coach, but what have they done, you know, for the roster to improve? So I'll give them an incomplete right now. They could somehow find a way to turn it around, but just the stuff that's coming out about what they're looking for, what they're seeking, they just really do kind of feel like the biggest loser out of everything that's going on so far.
I think definitely too, if you kind of extend this out and think what kind of botching this James Harden situation could mean for Joel Embiid, his future in Philly. Like, does he look at the situation and just be like, what a mess the last few years have been and want something maybe he thinks is more stable? There's been no reporting around that. Who knows if he'll ever get there? Maybe he's a Philly lifer, absolutely loves that no matter what happens. But it's also like you can kind of map it out, right? Like you can see it happening.
Right. Yeah. So it's tough. It's a difficult spot. And I even think for them, as far as like the draft, they ended up having to get 3 undrafted free agents who are on 2-way contracts and potentially, you know, talented guys. But like, how are they building? How are they moving forward? So I think that the Sixers, they got to figure it out. We'll see if Daryl Morey can put his genius to the test once again. But this is probably his toughest task that he's faced thus far. And I'm sure it's not easy for him to learn that James Harden doesn't want to be with him anymore. As we wrap here, today is Tuesday, July 3rd, also known as the first day of Summer League action. It's pretty crazy. We were just talking about the draft, free agency. Well, the California Classic and Salt Lake City Summer League get underway, and then the Las Vegas Summer League, NBA 2K24 Summer League, in which all 30 teams are playing, gets underway on Friday, July 7th. Scott, I pose you the question, what player not named Victor Wembanyama you most excited to see during this summer league, during the summer league circuit?
I think Chet.
Yeah, he's back.
Chet on the Thunder, he's back. I think that he showed some fun stuff last year in summer league.
So good last year.
Unfortunately, he suffered that injury. Haven't seen him since. This will be his return. by all accounts, like it seems like he's put on size, right, in this year off. So I'm excited to kind of see what he looks like out there. But just the potential of what he could be, I'm really drawn to, especially on this Thunder team that is so guard and wing heavy. Having a big man who, you know, can protect the rim, step out to the three-point line, can do some guard stuff, what that looks like next to this team. So he's definitely someone I have my eye on. I'm also just really excited to see Scoot. Like, I love how he plays. Super fun watching that back, that one exhibition game, because he got injured in the second. But that exhibition game against Wemby, where he kind of went toe-to-toe with Wemby for a long time. I really like his game, so I'm excited to see how he looks like in summer league. What about yourself?
Those are good ones. You know, one note on Chet, you know, you mentioned he's put on, I think the reports he's put on about 13, 15 pounds over the past year, because he was just kind of, he was working out and rehabbing that foot injury. So catch him while you can, because I don't feel like he and those talented guys on OKC's summer league can be playing much. And I think Portland has a really fun summer league roster as well. So those are two teams that are definitely worth watching. For me, it's Brandon Miller and the Hornets. You know, I think we'll see what the Hornets saw on him, right? You know, I know he's got a lot of pressure on him, just, you know, going ahead of Scoot. Everybody thought it was a no-brainer to take Scoot second overall. But then also shout out to LaMelo Ball, five-year extension worth up to $260 million. So maybe the Hornets are saying we're committing to our point guard. We're not drafting another point guard. So we'll see if he is not necessarily the missing piece for the Hornets, but see, maybe he can prove people wrong. I think he will have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and they have some other young guys. Nick Smith Jr., who was pretty much projected to be a lottery pick coming in to his season last year, and some injuries kind of derailed the season. So they got a high upside talented guy there as well. So I think the Hornets are going to be a really fun team to watch. I also think the Pelicans are going to be a pretty fun team to watch. EJ Liddell missed all last year with an ACL injury. They got Jordan Hawkins from UConn as well. So those will be some fun teams to keep an eye on. I think it's just going to be a lot of fun basketball action to watch around the league. And I'm excited for it, because we get to see the next generation of action in the summer league.
Summer league's always interesting. You know, you got those, I feel like, first few days, tons of excitement, and then you look up and it's the final day and you have no idea who's on the court because everyone's just left.
That's true.
As you said about Chet, I think it goes with all these top prospects. Probably best to check out the first couple games, because it's a good chance they won't be playing at the end of it.
And I'll throw one more name in there, Marquise Noel for the Raptors. We talked about it. He was so fun at Kansas State during the NCAA tournament. So I think Raptors fans are going to fall in love with him. They lose one undrafted point guard, and they get an even more undersized undrafted point guard with a bigger chip on his shoulder. So he'll be fun to watch. And for those of you out there, Victor Wembanyama is expected to play in Las Vegas. They take on the Hornets. I believe it's on Friday, July 7th. So that's probably going to be the roof might come off the building in Vegas when that happens. I know we've seen it for Lonzo Ball out there and Zion out there. So I would think that it could be 10 times as crazy for Victor Wembanyama. And we'll talk about it next week. We'll hopefully have seen him play and see everything that unfolds at Summer League. And we'll be back here to talk about it on NBA Sound System. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Sound System. Please make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll keep the NBA content coming throughout Summer League, free agency, and the FIBA World Cup is coming up as well. USA finalized their roster with Josh Hart. So we'll talk more about that once we get closer to the World Cup. For Scott Rafferty, my name is Gil McGregor. We will catch you next week.